Thank you for coming back so promptly, and welcome to this armchairless armchair session. If you can imagine we're all in armchairs, it will be an all relaxed, perhaps with a mojito in our hands. This is a policy discussion, having heard from the national level about the challenges of implementing mainstream policies and reaching all types of communities. We're now moving with a sort of very focused discussion on the EU level and at what the EU policy domain can contribute, and then also how that interaction works, firstly with the national level and then linking local governance, national governance and EU governance. I think a lot of people are asking questions at the moment about the future of integration policy at EU level with the publication of the European Agenda, which left a mystery in the air with a couple of sentences about the future of integration policy. It's understandable that political focus is elsewhere, but I think there's still a role for the European Union to play in terms of funding sources and the new policy cycle with the Asylum, Migration and Integration Fund, but also the potential of other funds, including the European Social Fund, which has a bigger budget and a more diverse and mainstreamed goals to look at social inclusion and protection. You also see the beginnings of efforts to coordinate informally. From our research as part of the Upstream project, we've seen informal relationships building up within the EU, though there's still a lack of that formal coordination and inter-service group to coordinate, and efforts to sort of link the EU and national level more formally through the open method of coordination has not so far been successful. Though other instruments have been used, and other more mainstream instruments have been used to try and bring integration onto the agendas of EU member states, such as the European semester reports. On occasion, it's been possible to put immigrant integration and prioritisation onto the European semester reports, which suggests a more mainstreamed approach is possible at EU level. And so the question is there time to formalise this? And also with data collection, we've heard in the last session the importance of data collection and the importance of the specificity of data, having accurate collection that can really look specific populations and localities, and that's something that, you know, maybe the EU can play a role in enhancing this, though across the European Union, currently we have immigrant integration indicators and the use of the Labour Force Survey and other surveys, but these are quite big surveys that tend to not have sufficient numbers of immigrants within the surveys to offer some robust data. So how might that be enhanced at the EU level? In terms of the impact of the EU role, our research found that this varies across the European Union. As I said this morning, it's been more important as a driver of integration policy in newer countries of immigration, such as Central Europe, and less a driver of policy in northwestern European states, where they're already established investments into integration. But it has proved to be more important in those countries where integration funding has diminished slightly and has sustained many integration interventions that might otherwise have been cancelled. And there are also more subtle impacts at the EU level. Funding migrants as beneficiaries through a number of different projects and funding civil society and grassroots organisations has built up the knowledge and specialisation and expertise across the European Union. And the new idea of taking 20% of the European Social Fund and focusing it on social inclusion may become a strong tool in the future to help a more mainstreamed approach for immigrant integration. But at a workshop we held in mid-May as part of the Upstream project, we brought together local actors and EU actors to talk about how the EU might support local level actions more strongly. And one of the key sort of findings from that workshop and the research more broadly is that there seems to be a disconnect between the funding as it's articulated at EU level and then how local authorities are able to access it and use it. And thus, it's become ever more important to really understand the role of national governments in filtering that funding and whether they're dispersing it effectively to the local level and what might be done in that regard. And from the national level, thinking about the future of integration at a time when it's politically sensitive, there's an enormous political pressure to deliver services effectively with limited funding. And if integration is local for the most part, how can the EU and national level ensure that effective provision, but also think about immigrant groups. As you will see from our final report, there are a large number of recommendations that are addressed to many different actors. I want to draw out a couple for our discussion. We really felt that enhancing horizontal coordination and finding ways to work across government would be extremely important, whether at EU level, national level, and indeed local level, but also creating a stronger dialogue between those three levels of governance, and particularly finding ways to link the EU and local level and making the national level a facilitator of that dialogue as part of that. Even in a context of austerity, how can we think about introducing more flexibility and innovation into funding, even when that funding is limited? And then one recommendation that's particularly dangerous for this crowd: how do you preach beyond the converted? How do you bring new people into the discussion and address the pressure to respond to multiple constituencies? How do you incentivize policymakers who have other priorities to work on your issues? And so with that, I'd like to introduce our two armchair panelists for this afternoon. I'm very pleased they could both join us. Carmen Blanco, who is the Deputy Director of Legal Affairs in the Ministry of Employment and Social Security in Spain. For those of you who don't know, the Ministry of Employment is responsible for immigrant integration and actually the majority of immigration policy writ large in Spain. And Laura Corrado, who's the head of unit for legal migration and integration in DG Home in the European Commission, who is the heart, the beating heart of integration policy within the European Commission, who will tell us exactly how it's going to be mainstreamed over the next 5 years. And I would like to start with a political question to both of you, which is, how do you make the political case for ensuring a whole-of-government approach to immigrant integration when the debates on immigration are so challenging? What are the narratives you can develop to support those cases and really think through how to ensure public support for a whole-of-government approach when a lot of people are worried about their own futures and have insecurities about where their own future leads them and may not be so concerned about the future of immigrant groups? I'll start with you, Carmen.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to everybody. I shouldn't be here. Marina del Corral should be in this place. She's the General Secretary of Immigration and Emigration, but last time problem is, and she has remained in Madrid, even though she really appreciates the work that the MPI do. So thank you very much for organizing this event. Let me emphasize in the beginning that these type of events are very enrichful and valuable for experts and policymakers, because we don't have the answers. After 15 years in the administration, I have no answers. I have only questions, so maybe...
Okay, this is going to be a very short time.
I'm sure we are going to learn. I'm going to learn from the other participants and the experience of other countries. So in this very difficult moment with limitation in the budget, how can we convince the Ministry of Economy that integration is one of the top priorities? Well, it's not easy. It's not easy because integration is a long-term policy normally acts in a short-term basis. So first difficulty, then you have to convince the Ministry of Economy that you have to prioritize migrants that maybe, and we have learned that in our own experience, maybe they are going to remain or maybe they are going to return back to their country. So you have to think, how can you convince them? Because everybody in the Ministry of Employment or the Ministry who is in charge of integration wants a very huge integration budget. That's obvious. The problem is that you have to compete with other educational minister, with the foreign affairs, with other ministers. And the problem is that the goals are consensus, but they are long-term goals. So you have to emphasize, and that's our experience, that there is no choice, that the investment in integration is an obligation, not because we are a very good person. No, not that's not the reason. It's in our own interest. If we fail in doing the integration, we are going to have social cohesion problems in the future, in the near future. So maybe there's no choice. It's an obligation in order to avoid the problems that we are going to face in 5-10 years if we don't do that. But it's not so easy. It's not so easy.
I think it's in case in all walks of life that you can discount risk for the future right now. It's hard to make people aware of that. Laura, from your perspective, how do you build a political narrative?
I'm not
sure yes.
He's working now.
Well, okay, then I use this one. Okay. Good afternoon, first of all. Well, first I want to reassure that integration does remain a priority. I know that some of you, maybe some of us, would have liked more paragraphs, maybe in the European agenda, more lines on integration. It is true that the focus, the political focus also understandably is on other areas, also at the moment, where we have to deal with a very difficult situation as regard asylum seekers, refugees, and so on. So clearly, but I also have to say that overall the agenda, I mean, the effort has been to have a balanced agenda, having four pillars, having dealing with the emergency, but also with the medium long term on all the four pillars. And clearly integration and legal migration are something for the medium long term, are not to deal with the emergency, but something on which we have to invest for the future. So I think the essential is there, the link, the clear link between effective integration and legal migration, the role of the EU in supporting effective integration policies in member states, the funding, the role of the funding. And in the agenda, there is also clear reference to the social fund, but also to the regional fund and the complementarity with the asylum and migration and integration fund. And this is something to which we will give attention in the future, even more than now. So I would say, and the common basic principles that we have developed, they remain valid. Only last year they have been reaffirmed by the Council with Council conclusions. So, what the agenda from 2011 that we have developed. Our network on national contact points is alive and kicking, and that we have some representatives here. So, and maybe one important point, maybe to make the link with the data collection and information. There is a publication that is being prepared jointly by us and the OECD on integration indicators that will be issued officially on the 2nd of July. There will be a press conference by Commissioner Avramopoulos and the OECD Secretary General on the 2nd of July, so which analyzes in depth a number of indicators, building on the indicators that we have developed at EU level, but broadening those and making a comparative analysis not only within the EU but also with other OECD countries. It is also important to say, since we talk about mainstreaming, that it does not only cover third country nationals. There is one special chapter on third country nationals, meaning non-European citizens, but there is it's also broader. Other chapters deal also with people with migrant backgrounds, and also there is a special chapter on youth with migrant backgrounds, so that can be both persons that, born foreign-born, but also born in the country native, but with foreign parents. So, I mean, I think that will be quite an important publication on which we would like to build also to further develop the data collection and indicators on integration and the monitoring, of course. So that's something I wanted to draw the attention to. So how do we build a narrative? That's the difficult question to which, I'll try to respond. I mean, I think that, of course, there is a clear case, an obvious case, as it was recalled, which is if we don't have effective integration of people, well, our problems will be bigger in the future. And also in terms of cost, even purely in terms of cost, economic cost, but also societal cost, we will pay much more. It requires clearly a big investment from the start, and I think this is the challenge, as you mentioned, given we are in difficult economic times. But otherwise, I think the price that we pay for non-effective integration is much higher, and I think we can all see it in all member states. And secondly, I mean, if integration works, first of all, labor market integration, of course, which is one of the key elements, then that will be beneficial, clearly, for the host state and for the person, clearly. So I think, I'm sorry to say obvious things, but I think we need to to insist on this, and I know that, the public perception can also does not always depend maybe on rational figures that we can provide about economic benefits, but perception is something which is affected by, I don't know, what happens in my neighborhood, what happens on the street, and we can provide figures saying, yes, but, you know, 1+% of the gross domestic product in favor. But this doesn't... So, I mean, I think, of course, we need to... And I mean, there have been campaigns that have been promoted in different member states about successful integration stories. I think all of this helps, but we need to keep working on that, and we will keep doing this at European level, at national level, I suppose. So, well, I don't have any magic formula, but I think it's something we need to invest, not only in integration as such, but also on the perception, public opinion, and so to ensure acceptance of our policies in this area.
And to stay with you for a moment, you mentioned funding and you mentioned the explicit reference to the European Social Fund and the European Regional Development Fund, which I think is a real, it's a small amount on integration, but that's a very, very key section. Have you already started thinking about how you make these more complementary, but also how you might connect them more closely to local needs? Like, are there ways of doing that, or are you reliant on national government to be the filter of that funding?
Well, yes, no, of course, I think we are working on that. we have had now several contacts also, in particular with DG Employment, about the social fund to see how we can ensure in practice these synergies and complementarity, because, of course, there is a legal obligation in the regulation, in our regulation, in the ESF, for member states also to ensure that on the ground. And they are obliged to justify in their national programs under our fund, under the social funds, how do they ensure that. Of course, it's easier when you have you have one single authority responsible for both, but it's not often the case. But there are agreements, memorandum. I think in France it could be one example where the two managing authorities, they have an understanding that they have joint meetings, for example, they share the databases on funding. I mean, there are practical things that are in place in many member states to ensure these on the ground, also to avoid double funding, if nothing else, but also, you know, to see that these are really complementary. So, because most of the financial allocations are under share management, so are decentralized, and member states do manage them. So, in a way, yes, they are the filters. We have also a small percentage on under direct management that we manage directly from the Commission side, namely union actions. And in the past, under the European Integration Fund, we had some specific actions where we funded directly local authorities and small projects. But it is a matter of fact that most of the funding is managed at member states level. Now, in our Asylum, Migration and Integration Fund, we also oblige member states to provide partnerships with local authorities and regional authorities, with also NGOs. So many member states, they do that. That there is a certain variation to the as regards the extent to which local and regional authorities and also other NGOs and so on are involved. It depends on the member states, but in principle there is an obligation to do that, and we will check this. But it's true that the managing authorities are more at national level. Maybe I wanted to mention something else. Yes, we will also do, I'm announcing many conferences now, sorry. We will organize our own conference at the end of September on the funding, 29 and 30th, on the how to match the funding with the political priority that we will have under the European Agenda on Migration and the European Agenda on Security. So it will be entirely devoted to funding. There will be also a session about ensuring synergies, in particular between the Asylum, Migration and Integration Fund and the ESF. So to address also this issue, and it will be open to participants, of course, from member states, local authorities, NGOs and all organizations that civil society stakeholders that are involved in the management of funding. So this is something that will be also important to build awareness of how to to use and how to access this funding. So this is something that that we are going to do. I think one of the points that you raise in the report, I don't know if this morning was raised, is the fact that, of course, we are a bit constrained. We are quite constrained by the legal basis under our funding. But again, so to focus on third country nationals. And it is this is something that we cannot really change. I mean, we have legal constraints. I think the maximum of creativity when the new legal bases were adopted was to include the immediate relatives of third country nationals when this would be needed for the effectiveness of the action. So that was really already overstretching a bit the legal basis, but it is true, we are very much aware that in practice, especially local authorities, cities, they don't make a distinction, obviously, in the services they provide based on nationalities. We are very much aware of this, but on the other hand, we have such constraints, so we have to take this into account. On the social fund side, it's easier because, of course, they don't have such. Their beneficiaries can be anyone. It doesn't depend on nationalities, but it depends on other things. So there are actions to facilitate labour market integration, social inclusions, and all non-discrimination. So all of this is quite horizontal. Of course, their focus is not migrants as such, but of course, they are covered to a large extent and will be covered not only under the trend on labour market integration, but as I said, social inclusion. There are, I would say, a lot of possibilities of funding under the social fund, both for migrants as such, that with projects that would target migrants, but also projects targeting people that are marginalized and that would also include as groups migrants. So I think that would allow more flexibility also in terms of use by national and local authorities of the funding. So that's something to bear in mind. I don't know if I answered, Liz.
It's very helpful because I want a future perspective. Carmen, Spain is a particularly difficult situation in that you have very limited resources, particularly for integration, but you have enormous number of needs locally and nationally for your own citizens and for immigrant populations. How far does EU funding help you relieve some of those pressures, and do you think you can utilise them better in the future? Is there something you can do with respect to how well you facilitate the use of EU funding to ensure that immigrant groups and disadvantaged groups are brought more closely into the benefits of that funding?
Thank you very much. Maybe? No, I will talk with this. Okay. Yes, Spain is okay. It's a specific case. No, it's not a specific case. It happens all in Southern Europe, but it's a specific case because we have had a big influx of migrants. There were no migrants before the year 90. There were no migrants in Spain. After that year, we have 5 million in 20 years. And then the crisis came, and it hit especially on those sectors where migrants were overrepresented, service and constructions, and they were also low-skilled migrants. So we have to face difficult to increase their employability, unemployment rates, and we have a big budget restrictions, as everybody said. That are the bad news. But I would like to add the good news of my country. Despite all of these factors that are true and that are very real, in Spain there has not been for the moment an increase of xenophobia, and according to the studies of the research of the thesis, migration is not considered one of the most important problems for the Spanish society. So when we look at the integration outcomes, I'm sure on the 2 July and all of the studies, the outcomes in education, in labor market, they are not good, not at all. We have a lot of room to improve. But we have something, and as it's something that is not well studied, I would like just to emphasize that. We have no problem with xenophobia, even though we have all the factors, so big crisis, big unemployment, especially among the migrants, a problem of budget constraints, and we have no xenophobia. It's not because of the policymakers, it's because of the Spanish society, that it's more tolerant than we thought. And no, because there's no magic formula. No magic formula. It's we didn't have money for anything. As the money in integration was reduced, there were also other legal basis problems. There were also problems between the competence, between not only the local level, but especially the regional level, that in Spain is very important, as everybody knows. And then talking about the European fund, that makes the difference. For us, they are crucial because we really need them in order to provide a first accommodation to the people that arrive to the beaches in southern Spain from Africa, but also to guarantee integration in a long-term basis. So for us, that makes really the difference. And we work also a lot with the social fund, with the general policy on the social funds, and especially with some collective like Roma. We work a lot of them. We have our own Roma population, but also Roma that have come from other EU member states. And we have a very good experience with the European funding. We would wanted more. We wanted more coordination. And the only problem that we see is that we have to act in a project-based basis. It's not easy with the funding from the European Union to have long-term policy. You have to work on a project-based policy, and that's not always the best way. But anyway, it's a way, and really for us, the European funding have been very important to have some kind of integration policy.
Let's stay with you for a moment more. Have you had experience of trying to work with policymakers in other ministries who have responsibility for public service provision, education policymakers, and policymakers providing services at the regional, local level? You know, how do you convince them to make integration their responsibility as well, that it becomes a shared responsibility? Have you had good experiences with that, or is it very difficult?
Well, as it happens always in life, it depends on the on the ministry. We have a lot of coordination with the Ministry of Social Affairs. We work together. There are a lot of plans. For example, we have been working talking about minors, non-accompanied minors. We have established a working group with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Interior, the Ministry of Social Affairs, and also the regions, and Ceuta and Melilla. They have their own problems. And we have been discussing how could we face and how could we manage with this with this specific group. And this, with the Social Affairs Ministry, we have a lot of work in common. We also work together with the Ministry of Education. We, for instance, now we are launching a project in order to provide diversity awareness and for the teachers. So, in order to give them tools to better manage diverse in the schools. So, we work together with. All the social departments, that means education, social affairs, and yes.
And then Spain has also brought in private sector. Has that been a big priority for you as well, bringing employers into this conversation?
Yes, of course, that's a big priority. Yes. As we are in the Ministry of Employment, the General Secretary is in the Ministry of Employment, we work together with the Secretary of work of, and so all when we conceive and when we design the migration policy is in the Ministry of Employment. So we are thinking that how can we improve the employability of migrants, because we know that we have a real problem. That's our biggest problem. Mm-hmm. How can we improve their employability? So yes, we work together.
And you were teasing me in the break that while we were trying to get a mainstreamed approach, we didn't necessarily invite everyone from all the DGs to this event. So having failed on our mainstreamed approach and coordination, How are you finding it coordinating with other DGs? You know, is there a motivation to try and coordinate more formally? And do you encounter obstacles in trying to really engage those actors?
Yes, I have to be careful. I'm being watched by DG Justice. I don't know if I don't think there is anyone from DG Employment. No. Of course, this is something that we are trying to do, that we have been doing, and of course now there is also an ongoing reflection on whether we should create some kind of mechanism to improve that. Now, this is always difficult because then, as you also say in your report, for the national level, there are always advantages and disadvantages in choosing one approach compared to the other. So I'll start from your recommendation on the inter-service group on integration, which certainly could be very useful to ensure that, you know, integration of the country national, because this is what we deal with in DG Home, is taken into account in the different, in other policies, which it is not that is not taken into account now, but at all, but more, let's say, in a more structural way. But on the other end, of course, as I mentioned before, in relation to the funding, this also makes it limited to what we can cover as in our mandate, in our legal basis, so we cannot expand this to social inclusion. Now, an alternative approach, so something that can be considered, and I will think about it personally, we will raise it internally. But of course, then other options could be, well, I will mention DG Justice, since I promised I would do that, that they have been doing, there is already, first of all, an inter-service group on non-discrimination, fundamental rights, and in that, linked to that also, there has been a sort of attempt to do a mapping of all activities, projects, and funding on social inclusion broadly considered, so not only third country nationals, but so this is something that we have also been doing together with them and DG Employment. Then, of course, it could also be a mainstreaming done on the DG Employment side, because, of course, they have no constraint of legal basis, nothing, but then the other risk, as you highlight for the national level, is that then we have a dilution of the policy there, because of course third country nationals or migrants is not the priority for DG Employment. It's one of the groups, one of the priorities. And so I was reflecting on the European semester case, and so I will use it as a case study if I can. No, this is something that where we have really made an effort in the, well, I would say in the last 2-3 years, to use the European semester process, which is a very well structured and formalized process linked to the EU 2020 strategy, so where there are recommendations on different areas to member states. So we have tried to mainstream integration issues concerning migrants into this process, also because we thought this is well structured and well accepted process, so it would be good, and also to ensure consistency and to cover also that. And I have to say that last year, in 2014, indeed this was it worked very well, because we had then, for 6 member states, we had the migrant-related country-specific recommendations, most of them related to need to foster labour market integration of migrants, but also with a focus on educational outcomes, early school leaving, so covering also other aspects. So that was, we thought it was quite useful. And actually, for this year process, then after that, we have enhanced our cooperation with DG Employment on this aspect, and they decided to include us in their own internal meetings and process, because, of course, DG Employment is one of the core DGs in this process, together with the Secretary General, DG ECFIN, because it's a broader process. So, and we had a very good cooperation with DG Employment, also in view of the recommendations of 2015. Now, what happened eventually, but that's something that somehow was above the heads of all those that contributed to the process. There was a political decision taken at the highest political level that this year the country-specific recommendations had to focus on the big issues, mainly on microeconomic imbalances and this kind of issues. So, and also on issues where there could be solutions implemented in a relatively short time and could be more concrete, more operational. And clearly integration is not one of those issues where you can say in 6 months, voila, you raise the labor market integration of 10 points. So in a way, we are now in a situation where, in spite of the analysis that has been made in the report for each country on the analysis of, including also analysis as regards migrants and the shortcomings and the problems and the things that need to be tackled, that we have no member states with a specific recommendation explicitly targeting migrants. We have some talking about vulnerable groups, specific target groups, and of course there are some recitals mentioning migrants. So in a way, it's a process, it's something that can work very well, but then of course when other decisions are taken, then you can get the thing diluted. So as I said, we are now considering what to do. Do we create another process or do we try, to build something else? So it's something on which I can't really say today, well, we will do this on that, but we are really reflecting how best to ensure that there is a new added value in whatever we set up and how to avoid also overlapping with other mechanisms that already exist. Maybe we can use, as you suggest, mechanisms that already exist. I mean, it's something that we are a bit discussing internally at the moment to see what we can do. But I mean, there is, having said that, even in the absence of a specific mechanism, there is a lot of underground work between the concerned DGs, and I have mentioned employment, justice, but of course also education and culture, DG Regio, where with whom we work on issues related to migrants' integration. So.
I think you've managed to come full circle in terms of understanding the difference between long-term objectives and the political need to have short-term outcomes. And I think it's particularly interesting. There are a number, I think, of interesting examples in the national reports with the Upstream Project, and we can share with you the website where all those national reports are, because they do highlight issues of coordination at national level that might feed your thinking as you think about coordination. And also, as I see these mappings taking place on social inclusion, and DG Regio is doing another mapping, and we could have a mapping of mappings for mainstreaming. That could be quite fun. I realise we're egregiously over time, but I would like to open up the floor for any questions, if there are questions from anyone there. Elisa?
Well, thank you. Yeah, can you... Is it on? Yeah. Thank you for your interventions. Gracias. I'm part of the Spanish team. I had an interview with Belén de Lorel. So thank you for the participation of the secretary on this project, no, through the interviews, and now you're here with us. I have concrete questions on anti-discrimination strategies, and because I believe at the moment there is some work is being done on migration issues, no? But when we consider non-discrimination issues, we have the Oberache in Spain, mm-hmm. Then we have the Council for Non-Discrimination in the Ministry of Social Affairs. And mm-hmm. Also, there is no law at the national level, but there is some fiscalias, like some legal instruments at the level of the regions to fight against discrimination, no? So from your perspective, I would like to know how you intervene in this field of non-discrimination policies, because also municipalities and regions, because they have competences in integration, they also maybe get funding or put fundings for associations to work in that field. But from your Secretary of State, how are you implicated, and what kind of, is there a new project of law in this field, or what is going on? Just to have your point of view on this. Thanks.
Thank you. Lisa was telling me about this earlier, but it was too complicated for me to explain. So, are there any other comments or questions? No? In which case, would you like to?
Okay. Thank you very much, Lisa. For us, the discrimination policy is one of our key priorities, not only from the migration point of view, but also from the governmental point of view. The OBEDACSE, it's the Observatory Against Racism and Xenophobia, as you have already said, is in the General Secretary. And there is also this Consejo at the Ministry of Social Affairs. That's the point. There is the general approach and the specific approach. I think that here we could apply the more and more the better. So there's no problem. It's necessary to have a good coordination. The members of the Oberachse are members of the Conseil, so there are a good coordination, and there is also the a strategy that is a mainstream, and there are a periodical meetings where representatives and delegates from the different department came in order to evaluate and assess the strategy and the goals in anti-discrimination. For instance, the Oberachse works together with the Ministry of Interior. With the Ministry of Interior, they have a very straight work, and they have been working in this training to the police forces in order to give awareness about anti-discrimination conduct. So I think that in this topic, anti-discrimination, we have worked a lot, even though we don't have a law. Usually, even though I'm a deputy director of legal affairs, I think that sometimes you don't need a law. What you need is a policy, and to put that on practice.
You're on record now.
Yeah, I'm on record because I don't want to lose my job. No, but sometimes it's most important to have a policy than to have a law that you don't apply. And that's the thing that we have with anti-discrimination. We have these anti-discrimination policies in a broad range of laws, but we don't have a specific law. It's not bad to have one, but we are just finishing this government, so maybe in the future.
Yeah, and do you contribute to the
Yes, from the Oberachse, they have worked together in order to create these procurators, yes. But they don't depend on us.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank our panelists for their time this afternoon. I know it's precious and we really appreciate it. I would also like to give thank yous to all of our partners for this research project. It's been a fantastic collaboration, and their presence here today validates that, I think, and you've heard them all speak. Huge thanks to Paul, who has been our enforcer today and has organised this entire event without much concentration from me, so thank you very much, Paul. And for those of you who are interested in talking more about the final report, the report's main author, Helen McCarthy, is sat at the back there, who's done an enormous amount of work pulling all the different country experiences together. So thank you all for coming here today. It's been certainly really illuminating for me, and hope you have a safe journey home, long or short. Thank you.